Hey, welcome to the Antonio Neves Show, where I share powerful stories, actionable lessons, and insights designed to elevate your personal and professional growth. I'm Antonio Neves, the best-selling author of Stop Living on Autopilot, an internationally recognized leadership speaker and coach. For me, it's all about getting a little bit better every day. Today, we are talking about an important topic, men and friendships. And joining me to talk about this is my good friend, Sam Davidson, who is a master in the art of community building. We unpack what it takes for men to build and sustain real bonds. We also confront the many unspoken challenges men face in maintaining friendships amid life's many demands. This conversation is all about breaking through the barriers that hold men back from reaching out and being present for one another and prioritizing our inner circle. A little bit more about Sam Davidson. Sam is a visionary leader and community builder. He currently serves as the CEO of the Nashville Entrepreneur Center. Sam co-founded and led Batch, a national gift and retail business that was acquired by a private equity group. Sam's philosophy is the height of one's success is directly related to the depth of their community. Before we get to this amazing conversation, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by my good friends at Caldera Lab. Now look, as a guy with a full schedule and responsibilities, having a daily routine is key. Part of that, especially since I hit my 40s, is taking great care of my skin. I've been a longtime user of Caldera Labs' high-performance men's skincare products, and I absolutely love the results. 1 minute in the morning and at night is all it takes to protect my skin, reduce wrinkles, and signs of aging. Caldera Lab makes skincare simple with a clinically proven three-part regimen: the Clean Slate Face Wash, the Base Layer Moisturizer, and the Good Nighttime Serum that visibly tightens skins. Now, backed by thousands of five-star reviews, this is the rare product that I proudly endorse. And hey, as a listener to the Antonio Neves Show, you can take your skincare next level with Caldera Lab and enjoy an exclusive 20% discount. Just use the code Neves at calderalab.com/Neves. Once again, get 20% off by using the code Neves, N-E-V-E-S, at calderalab.com/Neves. All of that information is in the show notes. All right, let's get into my conversation with Sam Davidson about men and mastering the art of friendships. I want to start here. You know, the press nowadays, we talk about this thing called the friendship recession and as it has affected men. You hear numbers like 1 in 7 men don't have a close friend. You hear things like the loneliness epidemic and how real it is. What I found extremely interesting, Sam, is that most of these articles that they're writing about men, they are written by people who are in San Francisco, Los Angeles, or in New York City. But you're in a unique situation because you're in the middle of the country. You are in Nashville. So I'm curious, when you read all these articles about the epidemic of friendship and men don't have other men they can spend time with, are you like, what are you talking about? Because this isn't happening here in Tennessee and the places that I go to, or is it just as real there as it is on the coasts?
I think it's just as real here. I think the question is one of circumstance and the question is one of effort. Here's what I mean by that. I think it can be easy to think that in a dense city, New York, San Francisco, LA, Chicago, Miami, pick it, that man, it should be easy to make friends because of the density. You bump into, rub shoulders, bump elbows with somebody every single day. But gosh, it just doesn't work out like that, does it? And to me, what that concludes is because men are equally lonely everywhere, is that then it's going to come down to effort. I can be surrounded by people. I could be on a full airplane every single day. I could be in a crowded restaurant. I could be in a packed gym, a stadium, but I could still be morbidly, and I will use that adjective, morbidly lonely. And so that comes down to how am I owning my condition, and then what am I doing about it? I love talking about, enjoy talking about men and friendship and companionship and relationships and loneliness because, man, we like to talk to men and about men when it comes to effort. Hey, work out harder, run faster, wake up earlier, lift more weight, eat healthier, grow your company, close the deal. But are we telling them to take that same form of effort or deliberateness when it comes to their friendships? And we're not. And so to me, it doesn't matter if you're in a rural town or if you're in the densest block in America, it's still going to come down to what effort do you want to put forth?
Yeah, well, let's hit this because you bring up something interesting, and we've talked about this in a variety of episodes in the podcast. And there's a word that comes up a lot with men that we don't talk about, and that word is guilt. Because when it comes to friendships, because there are certain expectations. You're a family guy. You have a teenager. You have a young kid, right? You're married. You have a really demanding job. And so a lot of the men that I talk to, that I work with, that I coach, they say, Tony, if I'm doing anything other than working, making money, or spending time with family, I feel guilty, or maybe the spouse or significant other's making them feel guilty, or society. So I'm curious, in your experience, how do you bridge that gap between, yeah, I have a family, yeah, I have this work I love, I want to make an income, and I still want to have friends in my life?
Look, guilt is the burden of the ambitious. Lazy people do not feel guilt because they're not missing out on anything because they're not doing anything. And so while I am absolutely at moments racked by guilt, I try not to be singularly driven by it, meaning it's okay if guilt can be a motivator. For some of us, our mothers were great at that to get some things done. Hopefully our parents didn't parent like that exclusively. But when the room's got to be cleaned real quick, or you really need to be nice to your sister, you should come downstairs right now. Sometimes guilt is the best motivator. So guilt can't be the only motivator, but it's okay if it is a motivator. And again, usually, so if you're a man listening to this and you do feel guilty that you're not working enough, that you're not earning enough, that you're not present enough, okay, good. Do something about it. Because again, I think that is okay. Again, because why would I feel guilty that I'm not working enough? Well, because I want to earn more money. Why? Because I want to provide to my family. That can be very noble. And look, you've got to manage that before it becomes a mental health issue for you. But that's an okay starting point. Don't let it be the only point or the ending point of your motivation, but it's okay if it's one of the ingredients to drive you forward. And again, where do we feel guilt when we're not living up to a standard? So thank God you've got some standards in place. So if you don't live up to that, man, I should be running faster. I should be earning more. I should be more present, more available. My schedule should be freer at this point in my life. Whatever that is, great. Feel that. Now do something about it. Just like, gosh, I feel lonely. I don't know if there's anybody that I could rely on. Okay, now what are you going to do about it? So let it be the first, or at least catalyze the next step for you.
I love that. Do something about it. We're not talking about doing illicit drugs. We're not talking about doing another glass of bourbon. We're talking about some things that can actually be proactive and benefit you rather than hurt you. And I say that a little bit in jest, but I think I know very well that overwhelm, that guilt, that burden that creeps up on men, we can find substances. We can find distractions, whether that's alcohol, whether that's people, whether that's porn, you name it, to take us away from what we're feeling versus doing things. You may have got the award of the year for that quote, guilt is the burden of the ambitious. I'm curious for you. I'm going to put you on the spot personally right now because you're in a unique position because you have a teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. And so you've had all those years to go through with you with your daughter. And now you also have a young kid. How old is your youngest one?
Just turned one.
So you got a teenage kid and you have a one-year-old. So I'm curious, where is Sam Davidson right now as it relates to your friendships and men? Because again, married, young kid, teenage kid, extremely demanding job. Where do you stand today?
Oh man. Yeah. And I'll do you a couple better because So I also got a four-year-old. So three kids, married. I want to be a good brother. I want to be a good son. I live near my immediate family that I grew up with. Want to be a good leader in my company. I want to, the things I volunteer, part of, board member, right. Yeah, I like the list could go on, and that could be true of any of us. And then, what are those priorities? And so, look, I'm one of these junkies who's all about like time management, productivity, like give me the latest tip, guidebook, journal, idea, TED talk. Like, let me find the thing that's going to crack it open for me and make everything a lot easier. And I don't want to say there is no such thing, but there probably no such thing. I think to your point, it does come down to what needs my priority, my attention right now, where I've been, again, I'll use the word guilty, again, in the best sense of it. What has been making me feel the most guilty the most recently? I think it's the question of anybody could, a lot of other people could do my job. A lot of people have done my job. So I'm the CEO of a nonprofit organization. I'm the fifth one in its history. There will be at least five after me whenever that time comes. I'm the only one. I'm the only one who will be the best one at the father to my three kids, at the husband to my wife, as the son to my parents, as the brother to my sister. So there are those things that in the grand scheme of things, in the moment, again, in those crises, like immediate A or B, pick it now. But look, most of our choices are not that. Most of our choices are actually planned out. When we're looking at our calendar, so tonight, I've got a reception I need to be at 5:30. I am leaving on the dot at 6:40 to make it across town for my daughter's. She's in the opening drum ensemble for the middle school concert at 7 p.m. There will be other receptions. I will probably find a way into the room with those people I'm going to shake hands with some other point. There is one eighth grade concert ever that's happening that matters to me. And so I've got to be at that. And so that didn't just pop up. I've known about it for weeks. And then the reception came up and it's like, no, I'm leaving there at that time. And so to me, it's also finding a peace with, but who are you going to disappoint? And if I disappoint the host of that reception or somebody who I was supposed to meet or what, okay. And if they're disappointed, and I'll tell them exactly what I was doing. And if they're still disappointed, then maybe I didn't want to do business with them or interact with them to begin with. I think that's one thing I'm learning as I'm getting older now in my 40s is that I don't know that it's worth getting into business or closing a deal or again, pick the milestone with people who don't align with those or don't understand those.
I love what you just broke down. Who are you going to disappoint? That's good because someone is going to be disappointed. And I can tell you probably 20 years from now when that 4-year-old listens to this podcast, they're going to be disappointed that I forgot about them the way we tend to forget about middle kids.
But look, I think exactly. That's right. Yeah, they get overlooked. But look, and disappointed, you know, I use that word subconsciously, but it relates to the guilt thing. Because the other side of that, usually, it's who can I impress? And I think for a long time, it was always that question. All right, tonight, I've got two things I need to be at that overlap. Who can I impress where I go? Because my teenage daughter, I likely won't impress her in the way that we think about impressing a business colleague. But I will definitely disappoint her if I'm not there. And again, because our kids don't seem to be impressed with us until decades from now. It wasn't until I had kids and they started having activities where I was like, oh my God, look at what my parents did to come to those baseball games, to come to those events that not every single one. I can't make every single thing my kids do. But you start to realize like, oh man, that couldn't have been easy for them. And there's that appreciation. So my daughter will appreciate that I'm there tonight. In 30 years, she won't appreciate it in the moment, and that's okay. I've got to be okay with that long-term investment or the payoff, the long-term payoff of that decision tonight.
Yeah, I think that's a really important reminder, and it makes me think about something I wrote in Stop Living in Autopilot, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's like we have to make sure we're giving our most to the people that matter most in our life, because I think a lot of times those people at home that we call wife, that we call son, that we call daughter, they will see mom or dad lighting it up at a reception dinner or lightening up on stage, or we're sitting at home and we're tired and then that business call comes in from our colleague or someone and they're like, Dad, a second ago I had zero energy and then I just saw him turn it on like that for them is a stranger. So it's critical that we give our best to the people that matter most, right?
Absolutely. And it's harder to do that. Look, my parents didn't have a cell phone to be distracted by. They didn't have email to be distracted by when I was in third grade. And we do. But my parents still could have been distracted by a phone call or by, you know, some report they had to finish. And those, like, again, it's always existed. But I do think it is on us to create habits and discipline that can remove some of the distractions if exactly what you're happening, what you're saying happens. Which again, that's where I almost feel guiltier. But I should feel guiltier if I leave the dinner table, the energy piece, absolutely, man. I'm so drained at the end of the day and I'm barely getting through bedtime with the kids. but if there's something I got to do, I'll get up for it. So yeah, how do you balance?
It's hard, man, because again, we are conditioned, or we think programmed, that we've got to do the hard work, earn the money, and that's what's going to provide.
Yeah. We're going to get practical here in a second. We're talking about some key things that dudes that we can do to have more friendships, maybe make friends as adults, or maybe improve the friendships that we already have that maybe we've been neglecting. Before we do that, I didn't plan on asking you this, but as someone who equally has a busy schedule, I've found that the only way, I know you like books, these business books, and we want to be as effective as possible in time management and have systems in place. Sam, the only way that I have found that I can add time to my day is by getting up earlier. Because guess what? If I'm trying to do a workout in the evening or put in some good creative time post bedtime with the kids, it's just not happening. And I like to get that all important sleep that we know is critical to stave off disease, illness, stay healthy, et cetera. And I'm curious for you, have you found that similar? Like, I find the only way that I can add time to my day and that I recommend to people is by getting up earlier. Does that mean you need to get up at 3:30? No. 4:30? No. But sometimes just 15 minutes earlier, 20 minutes earlier can make a difference. What have you found?
Yeah, yes, I get up early. Sometimes usually naturally, like before my alarm. And when that happens, and again, not like hour. So let's lay it out here. So yeah, my alarm is set for 4:01 a.m. If I wake up before that, within 30 minutes or so before that, if I wake up way earlier, I'll try to go back to bed. Then yeah, I'll go ahead and get up, get a little extra bonus time. I need to get up early for a couple of reasons. One is just to mentally focus. If I have to go straight to parenting, especially young kids, I will be stressed out, discombobulated. I need some time just to sort of, for me, to sip a coffee. I have a strict routine of what I read. I try to get in a workout. If I'm going to work out, it's going to be in the morning. And the workout is based on did my two youngest at least sleep until 6 or 6:15? Then I was able to get a workout in. If they woke up at any point around the 5 a.m. window, then they're up, they're ready to go. Then, okay, now I'm parenting. So I need some kind of buffer between me and kind of human interaction, especially my kids, as much as I love them. And I use that time then, yeah, to, again, work out if I can, to kind of read and start the day, center the day, and all that. If I've got some extra time because they sleep a little later, then maybe I'll start actually working. So again, responding to emails, working on a report or presentation, whatever the work is. But I try to keep the before, 8 a.m. time for more the consumption versus the creation. So the reading, if I'm going to read, that's when it happens.
I like that you frame it as bonus time, by the way, because I think that's intentional, that word choice, right?
Eventually it's going to go. All this is seasonal because I cannot maintain this pace. I know that at some point in the next couple of years, I'm going to need more than 5 to 6 hours of sleep. I just am. My body is. I'm getting older. That's true. But that should coincide with, again, I have a 14-year-old. Try to wake her up. Try to wake her up before noon on the weekend. Impossible. So at some point, my sons will be at the age where they're also hard to get up. And then it'll be 7 and I'm trying to get them out of bed and get dressed so we can get to school on time. So there'll still be battles. They'll just be different battles. And so I'm approaching it like that. Like, I've probably got another few years where I, A, can do this, and B, will need to do this. Yeah. I guess I'm just going to have to do this until they carry me out on a stretcher, which is going to be soon at this rate.
Yeah, that's good awareness that it's not going to be forever.
Right.
I want to shift and get a little more practical for the listeners, specifically for the guys who are thinking about, okay, I hear you guys. Yeah, that friendship recession for me, it's real. I'm not spending time with my buddies and friends like I used to, and I miss that. And I'm seeing the negative costs associated with it. You have this kind of a three-part framework. And one of the first things you talk about, Sam, is you focus on the things you have to do. You have to do. Mm-hmm. Can you break that down?
Yeah. So I think for all of us, and there's people who use this framework in other areas in terms of prioritizing leisure time, et cetera. But most of us, there are things we have to do, things we want to do, things we ought to do. And so, yeah, so the things we have to do, we got to go to work. We got to eat. We got to keep our house clean. We got to pay our bills, make a long list of what you have to do. So my first question is, look, if you have to do these things, what are the immediate friendships that you can garner through those? Mm-hmm. So again, one of those, I think most people would say, yeah, if I have to go to work, based on whatever work looks like for me, what are those connections there? There can be some boundary issues. You want to navigate those things correctly, of course, with work. But again, it could be a vendor. It could be one of your top clients. Again, does that complicate the relationship long term? Because ultimately it is still about business. Sure. But it doesn't mean you still can't be friendly. It's still, you still can't look forward to seeing someone. So I think that's always, I will say, kind of the easiest, because the stuff we have to do, if we're responsible, we're going to do them. And so who is there, who is around virtually in person that you see on a regular basis that, again, you may have to say, gosh, I see you here. I co-work. I see you here every day. My name is Sam. I call on this client, restock them every other Tuesday. How can you get to know them a little bit better? Because again, what happens as we get out of college or out of our formal schooling, what disappears instantly, nobody tells us this, is, but you are in a, progressively fewer social situations or situations that are less social in nature. College, for example, we're all trying to meet each other. We're all hanging out. We're all here for a good time. We want to learn. But like, there's parties, there's games, there's all this stuff that's happening. It's programmed for us. Ta-da. Now you're in the real world. This company's got 7 people. Here's your cube. That's all you got now. And so you got to work. You got to figure out how to do that stuff for yourself, because it's not programmed for you. The conditions, the environment isn't what it once was. So let's at least take what the stuff we got to be doing and see who's around there.
Briefly on that, on the have to do, I'm curious. So obviously, we know Sam today in the role that he's in now. Prior to this, Sam has been an entrepreneur for years and a business owner. And as someone who owns a business as well, not in the same capacity that you have with employees and teams, I know for a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. it can be a little bit lonely. It can be a little bit isolating at the mm-hmm. top. So I'm curious, how did have work when you, and obviously you're the top of an organization right now as well, but how did the have work when you were running your own business? Because those relationships are a little bit different.
They are. A couple of ways. One, you could still, so as an entrepreneur, you hopefully can get to a place where, yeah, you have to run a business, to grow it, to lead it. But what are the things that you still have to do? So at some point, maybe you don't have to run the finances every week. You can hire that out. You don't have to do every single sales call, because you're going to hire somebody else to do that. So again, hopefully you can pick what do you have to do, et cetera. And so even within that, you'll have some choice. I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs, once they get to a certain level where, yes, they have teams, they feel good about what their teams are doing, and they maybe have a little bit more balanced schedule. They're looking for groups like EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, or YPO, or other business ownership type groups near them. Some of these are part of national networks where people are facing the exact same thing. And so it can be lonely at the top. And especially when it comes to who can I talk to about wanting to fire so-and-so, or who do I talk to about trying to get together this bridge loan real fast so I can make payroll? So people who have that level of pressure, decision-making challenges, yeah, you likely can't talk about that with any employees, probably not a client or even a vendor. So you've got to look for some of those opportunities. And then you tell yourself, I have to go to my EO meeting. I have to go to my forum. I have to go to this group because that's my job. And so when we start to treat things like our job, we start to think like an owner and we own a process, then guess what? Most of us are going to do them and do them well. And so some of that is, how do we take those opportunities or responsibilities and remove them for the, I should do that. I should join a group with peers, and to say, no, I have to join a group with peers. So some of it's our outlook and our framework to start.
That's a beautiful way to look at it. And that's why I really love the value of what communities like Man Morning are creating, because this is something that I look at it as my job, to show up on Thursday mornings in person to get that, because otherwise I would not have that type of community, that type of bond, that release, that outlet. And as I see chapters open up all across the country, men are getting that exact same thing. And even though it's not specifically for entrepreneurs, I have found a lot of business owners are really leaning into Man Morning because they feel isolated, and knowing that every single week they have a place to show up where these other men will be, who may not be the best friends, by the way, but right. Just dudes who are committed to growth, dudes who are committed to getting better, show up in that hour. They get so much out of it. And by the way, I should just say that I think that when we kick it with friends, it has to be like half day. You have to go to a full like football game. I've had some powerful 30-minute coffees that have lit me up for the full day. It doesn't need to be all day. Let's get into the second one you talk about, Sam, what you want to do.
So yeah, the want to do, this is typically where we think about things like hobbies, which again, lead to opportunities for connection. So playing golf, going to the gym, going for a hike, craft brews, like whatever you would consider a hobby. How do you make that social? Because I think it's so easy to do any hobby nowadays by yourself. So I can get good at golf and never talk to another human being because I can go to the range by myself. I can get a simulator. I can take an e-course. I can go like I can do everything still by myself. And so my challenge sometimes, I do this sort of with what we call our vices. And again, nothing sort of illegal or illicit, but let's say you like bourbon. My challenge would be, how do you never drink alone? So that's great. You like bourbon and you're a connoisseur and you collect it. Cool. How do you use that as a chance to become friends with other men? Great example, a guy named Jason, entrepreneur here in Nashville that I had met before this role. Jason was like, man, I got a cabinet back in my house, built a bar out there. Let's come hang out. And I was like, absolutely. And so again, it was something that, should I do that? Do I have to do that? Then I want to do that. But again, it was that opportunity. He could have been drinking alone. I could have been drinking alone. But it's just one of those things, like, if we're going to do it, let's do it together. There's also, I would say, some added benefit, protection, guardrails there too, based on what you're doing, where somebody else can say either, hey man, slow down, or not, you know, something like that. And you see, you want to create those. So that's what, you know, maybe it's eating sugar. Maybe it's watching a movie, you know, something that we might consider, again, not a vice in kind of the legal sense, but like, what is something you're also just like, you don't want to only do it by yourself. I'm going to eat a pint of ice cream tonight by myself. And then I do that every night this week. It's not going to be good for me. But if I limit it to, again, people do that with desserts where like, I don't have ice cream in the house. If I'm going to have ice cream, I do love it. I'm going to go out. And so it's going to be a treat. Okay, cool. That does allow, that does help you eat less. Again, whatever that vice is that you're, and I always say that it's a thing you're spending money on that's discretionary, or a thing, again, that indulging in it on repeat by yourself is also not healthy. How do you make those things social? And then again, why, if you, you could do it alone, but why would you? And so if you could truly find that activity, watching a sporting event, again, telling them go, you know, hobby bowling, cornhole, whatever. How do I do it with somebody else?
Well, it makes me think about something that you used to do. Maybe you still do it. And I wouldn't categorize this as a vice. I would categorize it as whatever the antonym is of vice. By the way, do you know the antonym of vice? Because I don't.
Virtue. Virtue, okay. Virtue, but yeah.
Okay. I remember years ago, this is pre-2020, man, where on a regular basis, maybe multiple times a week, I'd get on Instagram and what would I see? I would see a photo of Sam Davidson all sweaty with a group of folks, who just crushed a workout together. And most times this was like pre 7 a.m., I think, when y'all took these photos. So you want to work out, you want to be healthy. So that was something that you did as well. And I don't know if friendships came out of that, but my hunch is you got something out of that. Otherwise, you wouldn't have pressed publish on that and shared it with your community.
Yeah, there's a couple benefits to that. One, when you work out with another person, the endorphins release, create community more quickly. And so the three things you can do, men, women, small group, large group, to create community more quickly. One is eat together. Two is sweat together. Three is volunteer together. And so again, that's because those three activities produce something biological in us that make us more receptive to building relationships more quickly, more prone to build trust, also allow us to be vulnerable more quickly. So the more we can engage in those things, people talk about like, man, why does your team go out to eat all the time? Or why do you always, you know, do lunch with somebody or whatever that might be? Because when we're eating, there's something in our brain that is immemorial, where when I'm seated, we're on the same level. When I'm seated here, I'm vulnerable, but I'm prone to attack, is what my caveman brain thinks. And so I'm with you that I can trust you even if we just met. And so again, it's true for working out. And so people, this is what the Peloton community understands, the CrossFit community understands. Any of these kind of fitness studios, Orange Theory, that type of thing, is it's in the shared group dynamic, is because we're sweating and now we connect more easily than we would otherwise. And so, yeah, I did that because, and you know what? Once I started making friends with CWiz, was one of the guys I worked out with all the time. I knew I'd wake up at 5 or whatever time we had to get there. And I was like, CWiz is going to be there. He's going to expect me to be there. I need to go. And sometimes he'd miss, sometimes I'd miss, but most of the time, that was a motivator. It was an unofficial accountability. I think official accountability will produce results more easily than just an assumed or expected accountability. But it was something to know like, yep, he don't want to get up either, but we're both going to do it. And we're going to do it. We're going to feel better at the end. And we'll take a photo and we'll put it online and we'll make everybody else feel bad about themselves or whatever the driver was. But yeah, that was it, man. And every time I've had a meaningful workout experience, it's been in the context of community, hands down.
Yeah. And the workout that I get when I'm with community, in a class or with other people versus the workout I get by myself are absolutely two different workouts. You bring up a really important word, accountability. Something that's unique about the Man Morning community for the weekly meetups is, Sam, it's opt out. It's not opt-in, meaning
I like it.
There's no text the night before saying who's in tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, you only text if you're out, because the assumption to your point is, see whiz, but you're going to be there. And that accountability is huge. And I love the three things you mentioned: eat, sweat, and volunteer. And most of my meetups these days with people are walk and talks. And I just enjoy that. Yep. I find the conversations are great.
Yeah.
The last one, we talked about things you have to do, the things you want to do. The last one you talked about are ought to do. Maybe workout falls into that, but ought to do.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. And after we talk about ought a little bit, we'll talk about how can you reposition something? Because probably what happens is, based on us, we're all going to do 90% or more of the have to do. We're probably going to do at least half of the ought to do. And sometimes we're going to do less than 10% of the want to do, even though as leisurely as they should be. Again, based on how driven we are. We'll get to that in a second. But the ought to do, I ought to volunteer at this charity. I ought to go to the parent-teacher conference. I ought to donate money to this thing. I ought to, you know, write a letter to this person I'm thinking about. All those things that sort of we would put some kind of moral condition on, of a person like me does this thing, or this is a good thing to do. That if we don't do it, the world doesn't end, our life doesn't radically change, but they're just sort of more a little bit ambitious or sort of ideal state. And so a person like me does this thing, joins this group or donates or is civically minded in this thing. The ought can be a motivator, because we say, no, you know, someone in my role needs to show up at this event. Other people are going to be there. They're going to expect that with me in this job title, this is what I do. I ought to, based on the kind of father I say I want to be, I ought to therefore show up at these things or volunteer for the Cub Scouts or whatever that thing is. So ought can be a powerful motivator. I ought to go to this, you know, go to church once a week or whatever that is. And so that's that, again, back to the guilt piece. That's okay. It's okay if that's a motivator. And so those ought to can be a good bridge between the have to and want to. Do I have to donate to charity? Maybe not. Do I want to donate to charity? Maybe not this one. Ought I? Yeah. Okay, fine. Because so-and-so asked, or again, whatever the condition is on that. So ought is a good middle ground between have to and want to. My challenge for anybody is, if you really want to build friendships and community, how do you move that from a want or an ought to a have? Because if we know that our have to list is going to get 90% done every single day, then put more stuff on there, put the right stuff on it. Then it will feel like more of an imperative. I'll give you a couple examples. I've got two guys from college I keep up with very regularly. One, his name is Bug, right? Good, you know, college bros get good nicknames. So Bug.
C Wiz, Bug.
That's right. That's the true mark of friendship, is you don't call anybody by their first name. So Bug lives in Tampa with his family. That's where he was raised. We were college roommates for 4 years. I go down there to that part of Florida once, two, you know, three times a year. Every time I go, I tell myself, I have to reach out to Bug. I have to get a beer with Bug. Do I really have to? No, we text frequently enough. We keep up with each other, Christmas card list, et cetera. I know what's going on. It's not the end of the world. And I'm not batting 1,000 on that. You know, this year, I went to Tampa 3 times. He and I hung out once. Would have loved to do it on all 3, but at least every time I tell him I'm coming, and we coordinate that. I feel like that's I cannot land in Tampa and not tell Bug that I'm landing in Tampa. Number two, beer. Another great guy, right? So Beer and our college roommates, college buds, we text frequently. We haven't seen each other in quite a long time, but the fourth Friday of every month at 1 p.m. Central, I call Beer, or Beer calls me. It's on our calendars. There's an invite. It's opt out. And again, out of 12 months this year, we'll do at least 10. We'll make 10 of those calls happen. I have to do it. It's on the calendar. The last piece, guy, you know, Whitby. Every time I change planes in Charlotte, I text Steve Whitby. Just as a, hey man, what's up? Hope it's going well. How's the fam? And it's just that trigger, because that's where he lives, in Charlotte. So I've moved those from ought to's to has to's for those three men, just as a way to keep that kind of soft touch. Because if I didn't, I bet in 12 to 24 months, I'd lose regular contact. They'd still be on a Christmas card list, fine. But there wouldn't be as rich those relationships. I've got other men in my life that I don't have that regular, like, have to kind of cadence, because the relationship is either more frequent in seeing each other or talking to each other naturally. But if I ever felt that it was starting to drift, I would be like, hey Tony, man, let's get a call in the books, like 10 minutes, you know, every other week, something to both get us on that cadence. And like you said, opt out only, not opt in.
Yeah, I feel extremely fortunate. One, that we regularly stay in contact. Those not on the calendar or official, is very rare that I think a month goes by that in some capacity. We haven't sent a text or something to make one another laugh. But you said something really key in this, and that is having something to look forward to, but having it on the calendar. And I think that's one of the things that not enough of us do, or we're not willing to schedule things, to put things on the calendar. We're like, we go with the flow, right? And I found that going with the flow, sometimes when you go with the flow, you can end up somewhere you don't want to go, where you don't want to be. And there's an accountability that comes with having something on the calendar, being an adult. And maybe as we get ready to wind down here, what we're talking about, my key takeaway from our conversation is making friendships, especially those important ones, have two types of things. I personally, man, lost a dear friend last year. And we connected probably every month in some capacity, but it wasn't a have to type of thing. And this guy I know since my college days, and I'm not trying to be, overly emotional on this episode, but I look back on that and I'm like, damn, man, I really wish it was a have to with Bill. And even if he still wasn't here today, I'd feel better about things because we know we were intentional about that. So maybe that's a takeaway for folks listening right now, is to get a piece of paper out or pull out your phone and think about who are those have to kind of people in my life. And by the way, that'll tell you a lot, because you may be spending some time with folks who aren't have tos, or are taking time away from those people do want to invest in. So that's great. Sam, this for me has been a tour de force of a conversation. I appreciate you as a friend. Man. Of course, if I get to Nashville, you are a have to, even though times that I've had to go visit straight north. So I appreciate you. I love the role that you're in. I'm in your corner. Anything you need, you know that, man.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it, man. This was awesome. Appreciate the chat.
Got it. Hey, thank you so much for listening to The Antonio Neff Show. For more information about the episode you just heard, head on over to my website at theantonionev.com. Hey, if you still haven't followed The Antonio Neff Show just yet or left a review, I kindly invite you to do so right now. It really goes a long way. Also, if you know someone who will get value out of the episode you just listened to, share this episode with them right now. All right, I'll see you soon with another great episode. In the meantime, I want you to remember the best is ahead. When you work and believe that the best is ahead, things begin to change for the better.